Okay, so we're going to do some chumash today. Makros. Okay, a little pre-Pesach drill. So, the first thing I wanted to do is a little bit about Dever. Okay, Makas Dever. So Dever is the Maka where all the animals, the Mitzri animals died. Okay? So, it's in Shemos, Perek Tas, beginning. Okay? So, it's a few psukim. It says, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Bo el Paro v'dibarto elav. Go to Paro and tell him, 'Komar Hashem al kei ha'ivrim shalach esamei v'yavduni. Send out my nation and they will serve me.' Ki mo'in atol shalach v'ot chamachazik v'am, because if you don't send them out, you still hold on to them. Ki ne'yara Hashem hoyav miknecha Hashem asad. The hand of God will be on all the animals which are in the field." Okay, all the different animals will be a very, very strong plague. God will differentiate between the animals of the Jews and the animals of the Goyim, of the Mitzrayim. And not none of the Jewish animals will die. He said, tomorrow, this will happen. Sure enough, he did. All the cattle of Mitzrayim died, but not one of the Jewish cattle died. Paro said that. To check it out. Hello? Paro sent out to check it out. And that's true, not one of the Jewish cattle died. Hi. Okay, so sure enough, Paro. So Moshe said that at so and so time, all the Egyptian animals will die, and the Jewish ones won't. God will differentiate between them, send the plague. And sure enough, it happened that way, and Paro sent out to investigate to see whether it's true. And it's true, no Jewish animals died. But it didn't work. But Paro didn't listen. Okay? So if you read the Pesukim, how many of the Jewish, of the Mitzri animal died? All. Okay, it says, Vayamas kol mikne Mitzrayim. And all the cattle, all the animal of the Mitzrayim died. Okay? Pretty straightforward. Problem is, in the next Makkah, where there was boils, it says, "Vayhi shchina v'abuos poreach v'adam v'abehema." There were boils on the animals and on the people. People and animals. So what animals? I thought all animals just died. Right? All the Mitzri animals died. They're in this plague, endeavor. So Rashi says, Vim Tomer, this is Rashi on Yud. Where did they get the animals from? Right? They all died. So he says the answer is the gezeira was only on those that were in the fields. Because that's what the pasuk said. There will be a plague on all the field, all the animals that are in the field. He says the hayareis devar Hashem. But those who feared God, they brought their animals into the houses. Same problem, because when the Mitzrayim chased after the Jews, right, they have by Yamsuf, it says they took all their chariots. But what do you mean, what chariots? Didn't all the animals die? So the same thing. That it was only the ones who brought their animals inside and had a certain fear of God, so then those were still around, and those had the makkah of Shechem. Those ones had the boils on them. Okay? So that's the way Rashi learns. That even though it says kol, all, it said, yeah, all the ones that were in the field. Because that's what the Pasuk said. The Pasuk said all the ones. There'll be a plague on the animals in the field. Okay? So that's fine. Right? That's fine. Doesn't say anywhere. I guess he does. It kind of does. It says all animals in the field. Doesn't tell them, you know, to bring it in. It didn't say that. I mean, explicitly, bring animals in if you fear God. But whatever. Somehow they did that. Okay. The Ramban seemingly learns differently. Well, at least he cuts himself off from Rashi's pshat. I don't know if that's his point, but he does. Because what does he say? He says, let's see. B'mignecha asher vasada. He's explaining why it says the cattle, the animals which are in the field. It says, Hisra osam behova. He warned them in that which is common. That which is normal. Ki rov ha-mikne vasada. Because most of the animals were in the fields. Not in their houses. But the plague was on all the animals. Even the ones in the houses. It says, and all the animal died. It doesn't say anywhere is all the animal in the fields. So even though when he warned them and says, all the animal in your fields are going to die, that's just what it meant, the animals in the fields. Where are the animals? That's where they're hanging out, there in the fields. But really, you see in the plague, they all died. He says, since it was like an abomination, but to the Mitzrim, well, shepherds are an abomination to the Mitzrim, so therefore they separated the animals from the cities, right? Except for when they were using them. Okay, when they had to use them to ride on or to carry. So it says that's why most of the animals were in the field. Why are they in the field? Because in general they didn't keep them around. It was like to be using animals was, I guess, a necessary evil in a certain sense. When you had to use them, you had to use them. But in general, you don't just keep them in your houses. In the country, they kept them out in the fields. And since they were out in the fields, he says, V'hine haya mikne rachok mi mitzrayim misteyar gevul goshen. So the field, the animals were far from Mitzrayim in the fields of the borders of Goshen, where the Jews were. So therefore they would mix, they'd intermix. The animal of the Jews and the guy and the Mitzrayim would mix together. And that's why it says God had to differentiate. God differentiated because they would have been differentiated. The Jewish animals were in Goshen and the Goyish animals were in mainland Mitzrayim. He says, no, it's not true. So since the Mitzrayim didn't want the animals around, they put them all the way out on the outside. So therefore, there was really a sharp differentiation. In the same grazing land or whatever, some of the Jews didn't, the Jewish ones died, and the Mitzrayim ones did. Oh, b'avor shalavar mishino ha'avir. Or perhaps you'll say, is really maybe they were far away, two different parts of the Mitzrayim or whatever. But since the way the plague happens is through some airborne whatever, he says, "Roishi espashet b'chol aplach, rak shas l'Hashem iman lafli." So he says the normal laws of nature would be such that it would any plague would be carried would be some sort of a change, some sort of weather change or whatever it is, or some sort of something in the air, and it naturally would kill all the animals, and therefore it was a miracle that God differentiated. Okay, so you're just working out what it means God differentiated. Either they were all together and therefore it was a clear differentiation, or they were far away, but whatever. Still, the nature of these plagues is that they're not isolated. But the point of the Ramban, why I'm bringing this up, is that you see the Ramban saying Israeli all animals die. Not just the ones that were in the fields, but the ones in the houses also died. You just warn them about the fields, because that's the normal warning all year. It's just like an expression. You know, the way you talk about animals, all the animals in the fields are going to die. But of course, it says when the Pasuk revealed the Makkah itself, it didn't say that. It says, I must call Mignir Mitzrayim. So if you say so, then the Ramban is back with Rashi's question. The question is, if all the animals died, then how were their animals to the next Makkah to get boils? Right? It doesn't seem impossible. Right, everyone with me? Joel, you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So, I think that the Ramban, I'm not sure about this, but I think the Ramban will answer based upon the Ibn Ezra. I think. Okay. So the Ibn Ezra says, he says, um,
let's see here. Oh, Vayamas Kol Mikne Mitzrayim. Okay. So it says, what does it mean to Kol Mikne Mitzrayim? It says Ruba. It means the majority. It doesn't mean all. It means the majority. Ki hine kosev shalach ha'izas miknecha. Because it says, send out your animals. Send out your animals. Like that was what it says in the Barad came. And the hail came. He says, take your animals and bring them inside. If you fear God, they'll do it. But he told them to bring the animals inside. So again, there's another makkah. Another makkah had the animals. Right? It's the same problem. You see, apparently there were animals. So it says, it just means the majority of them died. The kacha timsa b'barad. That's kol eisav asada. Ah, you'll say, why does it say all? It says by barad also. It says all the grass of the field. But then it says later that by Arba, by the grasshoppers, the locusts, they ate up all the remaining grass. So it says that all got destroyed, so it just means rove. It says all, but it means rove. Okay? All doesn't mean all. So since all doesn't mean all, so therefore it doesn't mean all, and it just means some of them, most of them died. So now you'll say, where were their... So now you'll ask, how were their animals available for the other makos? So it's only majority died, not all of them. Not all of them. Right. And presumably, again, I would think the Raman's going to have to say that also. Because he's saying it's the house and the field. But what presumably he'll say is it doesn't mean they didn't all die. Right, but whatever, if the Raman will say that or not. But that's what David Ezra says, for sure. That's what bothers me a little bit, is Morris is asking. It's how the pasuk says all. I mean, it's very nice to say that the pasuk doesn't mean it, and he's even bringing a proof that it doesn't mean it. Fine, but it says it. So, in what sense is it saying it? Is it an exaggeration? Right? I mean, what's the deal? Why does it say that? If it doesn't mean it, say ve'amaz ra'rov mikneim Mitzrayim, something like that. Right? I mean, ruva kakula is nice in halacha. Right, but it doesn't quite fly in terms of a story. I mean, a story, it's a pretty big difference if you're saying all the animals died or most of the animals died. Right, they're different. It implies an untruth. I mean, it's openly. I mean, it says it, and it's clearly can be contradicted by later on. So what's the point? I mean, you see, Rashi understood it to mean all. Right, it's just all in the fields because the field of Torah already said about the fields. But I mean, Rashi thinks kol means all. So I mean, right, it's usually what the word means. And it's true, Matt's pointing out, according to Rashi, it's not so smooth either because it says all, but it doesn't mean all. It means all the ones in the fields. But he warns him it's going to be all the animals in the fields. Right? God's hand will be all in the cattle, which are the animals which are in the fields. So then it says, and they all died, all the animals of Mitzrayim died. So you'll say it means the ones that he previously referred to. You know, you could say that. But every last one of the ones he referred to, but not the ones that he didn't refer to, that's of course not. But it's a little bit tough, but it's still, I think, better. At least in a certain sense, you could say kol. But here, what does kol mean? It doesn't, in no sense is it true that they all died, it just means most. Something like this is that. That maybe the point of the makkah here, like you could ask also, why didn't they all die? Why didn't they all die? So it seems like the point of the makkah was not to deprive them of all their animals. Okay? They were still out of animals, they still had animals afterwards. But, or that wasn't the, fine, I mean maybe part of it was to deprive them of some of their animals, but it wasn't the idea, just total desolation of all their animals. But you see, it's like the major theme in the makkah is this idea of a hifla, of showing that basically God is in control of life and death. Okay, God kills. That's like a major thing. But he doesn't just kill, he kills based upon tzidkus versus rishus. He kills the mitzrim and he saves the Jews. Okay? And that's the idea of a hifla. That's the idea. The makkah here it is a plague, a deathly plague, which only goes to the bad guys and not to the good guys. Okay? So that was accomplished through killing the Mitzri animals and saving the Jewish animals. But it's not so easy to differentiate between the two groups. If, for instance, there were only 100 animals, Mitzri animals, killed, and all the Jewish animals were saved, so then it wouldn't be clear, the differentiation wouldn't be clear. Because you'd just say, okay, fine, so the Jewish animals got lucky. They weren't, but there was a plague that was going around, and they didn't get it. The Jews didn't get it, but whatever. I mean, the Jews are a small percentage of the animals in Egypt. So the only way you could make a clear, demonstrative differentiation between the Jewish and the Goyish animals is by wiping out all the Mitzri animals, or almost all. Okay. In other words, all I think means it was totally widespread plague. Everyone was hit. Every farm, every animal shelter, every whatever there was hit major, had a major hit. Okay, all the animals in Mitzrayim were killed, which means that there was no region, no subset which was spared. There were individuals which were spared, and a minority of individuals were spared. But it was to the point where there's no explanation. You can't say all the thousands or however many of Jewish animals that were alive was just a happenstance. It was because that region of Goshen was spared. There's no way to say that because there was no regions that were spared. The Makkah was complete. And every single farm, every part of Mitzrayim was hit by the thing. And therefore, and only through that, is it going to be clear to Paro that it was, and to everybody, that it was a nace and that it was a hifla. Maybe there was just a disease. And that's why Paro looked. He says, okay, fine, our animals died. Most of our animals died, overwhelming majority of our animals died. But let's check it out. Maybe some of the Jewish animals died. And if a few Jewish animals died, and then it's just a quantitative difference of a lot of Mitzri animals and a few Jewish animals, fine. Then already it's not going to be convincing. But there was not one Jewish animal that died. That's sort of emphasized. That's zero. Paro checked it out and it was zero. So you have an overwhelming majority of the Mitzri animals are dying, wherever they are, in all of Mitzrayim, and zero Jewish animals died. That's what causes the Ve'efa. Another differentiation, to be noticeable. So the reason why it says Kal is because it was important that it was a Kal, which means it was totally widespread throughout the entire Mitzrayim without exceptions. But it, again, like I guess kind of like what Matt is saying, it doesn't mean every last animal dies. That's just not the way a plague goes. But every last farm and every last region, it was spread. It spread everywhere. There was no safe haven of which wasn't it. You know, it would be like there's stories of there was a fire in the town and the only building that was left was the shul. You know, or something like that. Yeah, if there's 50 buildings left and one of them is a shul, that doesn't prove anything. If every single building or every region and there one region which doesn't hit, that's something which is noticeable. But it has to be overwhelming. And that's what the Torah is saying, call. But it's not talking. It's talking call vis-a-vis this clear differentiation. All of Mitzrayim was hit and Goshen wasn't. But it's not doesn't mean every last animal. That's not what it means. And I'd say similarly, I think. I mean, you have to look by the mic over there by Barak. But it means all the Esav was ruined. It means there's no regions. It means on a qualitative, insofar as the cult, the society was concerned, there's no regions that were spared. It doesn't mean every last drop of grass was burned up. It means the whole entire Mitzrayim, all the regions, the whole country was burned up by this thing. It doesn't mean an individual thing. In the context of the country, the individuals don't really matter. Every farm, every animal grouping was that. It wasn't every single animal because there's no reason for it to be. See, if the idea was the Makkah was just to kill animals, it was just a net killing animal, you know, thing, so then the question is, why did he kill them all? I was saying that wasn't really the point. The point wasn't to kill every single animal. The point was to God to be in charge of life and death with a differentiation between Jews and Mitzrayim. And the only way to do that, again, is if, because plagues spread, and plagues go to certain regions and not other regions. The only way there for that to be clear, that God's in control of life and death, is to make it widespread and to kill the amount at which it becomes convincing that this had to be an ace, that the Jews are spared, it must be an ace. But there's no reason to kill every single last one. They still had right to the animals, and they're, look, there are other animals were hit by other instances and other cases and whatever.
So you would say God punishes in the least deadly way to prove the point?
It depends what his point is, yeah. I mean, if the point is to punish, then yeah, but here, well, I should, right, there's no reason to punish more so. Now, in Rashi, it could be in Rashi also, is like, is that if you say that the idea was really to show the differentiation, so now he's holding is that even within the mitzvahim themselves, there was differentiation between those who feared God and those who didn't fear God. Which means is that not every mitzvah animal died, but only the mitzvah animals that were in the fields. But the other ones lived. Yeah, those are the ones who Yarius Dvar Hashem, who feared God. So the Jews and those among the mitzvahim who feared God, also their animals didn't die, which shows basically the same idea. That the point is that God kills, but dependent upon Tzchar Onesh, dependent upon a person's level. So that was part of the Nes, was that the Matarashi that was built into the Nes itself was that it differentiated between the Mitzri, even within the Mitzri there was differentiation. Right, but the Ibn Ezra doesn't seem to learn that way, and the Ramban doesn't seem to learn that way. But it's in line with that's part of the Makkah. Part of the Makkah. And you see that the Paro was really investigating the thing. I mean, it's interesting. His Paro was he wasn't just like reacting to the thing. He was really looking into this thing and checking it out. Seeing they're making a claim here. Let's check it out. Let's see if it's true. Right? Let's see. Maybe Moshe just knows that there's a plague coming. Maybe he just knows that he knows about plagues and he knows about things and he knows how to predict it. Right? So, but the fact that that's an important test to see whether it was true. And none of them died. But it was. But still didn't move him. Yeah, Matt mentions a good point that it's not just that the Mitzrayim who feared God were spared, Mitzrayim who in their hearts feared God, but it's the Mitzrayim who did an action, a clear and demonstrative action of fear of God by bringing the animals inside, who were spared. So that's clear to Paro and to anyone who looks into the thing that it's based upon your fear of God. Otherwise, it's just God knows that you're God-fearing. That's not going to really be clear. It's going to defeat the purpose. But here it was clear that all animals died, except for those who were owned or taken or done by clearly high level people or people who had yeah. But it doesn't mean that they're necessarily big tzaddikim, because you see that they got the next plague, they got boils. But it means is that they did an action of tzidkas, and therefore they weren't punished in that regard. But that's fine. It doesn't mean God's a racham. So even if someone is maybe a Russian, and so far as they did have a good act and they recognized God, so then God had mercy on them. Right, but it doesn't mean they were. That only means that they were big tzaddikim. But it means that they had a degree of fear of God which was expressed, and that was merited. They merited in that their animals would be saved. Okay, so first of all, I'd like to say that I'd recommend. I mean, this is one makkah. You know, and presumably there's more to say on it. But I mean, if you're looking for stuff to do at the Seder or whatever, I mean, over the years I've studied different makkahs. I mean, you just take a makkah, there are 10 of them. And each one has details and different mafarshim on it. And it's like a study. Each one could be a study in its own right. It's kind of interesting to do. You know, to study the different facets of the makkah, what's going on, what was the point of the makkah, I don't know. There's a lot to do in studying the makkahs. You know, you can just pick a makkah and try to spend a few hours on it, you know, or days. So what I want to mention now, and I don't know how fully we'll do this, but maybe we'll just get you thinking about this thing, and it's worth pursuing more, is Ibn Ezra, who he basically gives like a summary of the Makos, of the 10 Makos. He kind of implies that there's like a system to them. It wasn't just God giving them a bunch of plagues, but he seems to be indicating that there's like a there's a system, there's a reason to the whole order, something like that. So maybe we'll go over it. It's not very long, and we'll give you some thoughts, and I don't know if we'll answer everything, but at least we'll get some insight. So it's like Ibn Ezra, if you don't know about it or you don't happen to stumble on it, then you won't find it. I knew this if it existed. I think maybe Rabbi has a tape on it. But it took me years. I mean, for years I've been trying to find this Ibn Ezra, but I don't know. I just happened to bump into it this year. But it's, you know, it's here. It's right at the beginning. I don't know why it's here. Could have been anywhere, really. But it's in the beginning of Perek Tas, Pasuk Aleph. It's It's actually quoted in Yehuda HaLevi, which I think is the Kuzari, but I looked in the Kuzari, and at least if the index is correct, it referenced me to one place which talks about the Makos, and it wasn't quite as wordy. I mean, it kind of might be referring to this, but it wasn't saying as much as the Ben Ezra was saying. So, go figure. So it says like this. It says, Bo el Paro el Haramon Shalom. Okay, so go to Paro to his palace. Fine. So the Omer B'Yudah Levi. Shtayim. Okay, here we go. Shtayim Makos HaYivimayim. Two of the Makos were in the water. Ha'achas Sheis Admu Meis Adaga. One is that it turned red and the fish died. V'Hashenes She'alu HaTzvardimayim. The second one was that the frogs came up from the water. The earth also had two. The land, I should say. I don't want to say the earth. The land had two. Achas mi'akinim. There was the lice, right, that they came out of the dirt. He hit the door and they came out of the ground. V'ashenes mi'aroth. V'inchayos mi'ravos. Right, that the animals, the wild animals. V'chsevatotzi ha'aretz nefesh chaya. The earth brought forth life. So, it's funny what he means by that. Like wild animals, that means they came out of the floor. But I think that's what I think he means the land. I don't think he means the earth. Land, it means like the environment, the society, the civilization. I don't know if civilization is the right word, but the environment. The animals came from the environment, that's part of the land. Part of the land. V'shtayim ba'avir. And then there were two makos which came from the sky. Yadaver, because the plague, einenu racham okar. So the way they viewed the plague, which is perhaps different than the way we view it, but I don't know, it could be still true scientifically, is that it's basically like a heat or a cold that's like in the air, which is different from ordinary. In one moment, because of this different heat spell or cold spell, many of them die. Because the spirit of all life, which is the heart, is dependent on air. So if you change the air properties, then you could kill many, make it hot or cold, it could kill many animals or many people. Okay, so I don't know, like we'd probably also say it's in the air, but it could be like airborne, you know? Some sort of a disease, some sort of a plague could be passed on through the air or whatever. But whatever, he's learning this through the air. Okay? Yeah, so that's another one through the air. V'ashen is makashchen. So the boils, because the sky above their heads is called Shemayim. He threw the dirt into the sky, the ashes into the sky, and it came down and it gave them boils. So those are the avir, the sky. Okay, so two and two. Two in the water, two in the land, two in the sky. Okay, that's interesting. I don't know why it had to be two and two. Why not one and one, or three and three? But that's what it was, two of each. Then, Mehamaka Shriyas, the seventh Maka, which was Barad, hail. Ureves Migalgal Hasa'aro Migalgal Esh, was a mixture of like the sphere of the storms and the sphere of the fire. Okay? Kvichin Kazu Esh Masakach Zohabard, so the fire was inside the ice, right? Inside the hail. So, that's important. Okay, that was the idea of that Maka. That it was somehow a mixture of these two different spheres or two different areas. I guess seemingly opposite things, right? The Hashminas Makas Arba. The eighth one was the locust. Sheba Merachok, Ayde Aruach. It came from far away through the wind. Okay? Somehow that's significant, that it came from far away with the wind. You notice, by the way, this is breaking down a little bit. It started off 2 and 2 is all nice, and then he's just saying, okay, the seventh one is the fire and the storm. And the eighth one is the wind that came from far away. Okay. V'atashiyas, and the ninth one, ha'isa maka nifla, who's an astounding maka. Sh'ne'edar or shneham oros ha'chav me'eretz Mitzrayim. Because there was like an absence of the light of the two great luminaries and the stars from Eretz Mitzrayim. They were held off. Held back from Mitzrayim. Which is funny, exactly what he means by that. I didn't mean that they were held like the sun and the moon. It says that God affected the sun and the moon. It's funny because Ibn Ezra on the Pasuk by Chushach says, it seems he says that it's like some sort of a thick fog. He says on the river, he says, I forget, well, some river or some sea, maybe it's Mediterranean or something. He says, sometimes you get a fog that you can't tell whether it's day or night. 5 days, he says. And he said he's seen it himself. Ibn Ezra says that. He It says, you know, I don't know if the you know, but you can imagine like a really super thick fog. It could be, you know, sometimes, right? I don't know. So it's funny though, because he's saying is the ninth one was that astounding that the light of the sun and the star and the stars and the you know moon were prevented from its shining, right? But I'm just asking that if you say that it's through a thick fog, it has nothing to do with the sun and the moon and the stars. I mean, it just make a thick fog. I mean, so I understand it's a big nace to make. It's not so easy to make a big thick fog like that, you know, on demand. But still, it's not exactly, like, what does he mean that the sun and the moon and the stars were withheld? That was an old astounding maka that their sun was withheld. Okay. And we have Siris, and the tenth one, Redes Hamashkes Migal Galei HaKavod LaHarog HaBechorim. The coming down of the destroyer from the spheres of the heavens, the honored spheres to kill the firstborns. Whatever that means.
Sar?
Sar. Sar is storm. It's like a storm. You know what you say, then one haluka. Yeah, I think it's the third haluka. It's like a storm. Right, so the system broke down. I mean, the first six were good, 2, 2, 2, and then he's just giving four different things. But it sounds like he's trying to give some sort of unified thing here, right? I mean, he's not just summarizing the makas for you. He's giving you a little bit of, like, an interesting spin on it. But the question is, what's he doing? Right? What's he doing? So where would you start if you had to analyze this evidence? That's it. Now, one thing you could do, in theory, which I didn't do, is like to look at the Ibn Ezra on all these different makas. I mean, I did look at it this morning on Mechoshech. But, you know, it is interesting. But that's something you could do.
It's an endeavor.
It's an endeavor, yeah. But the Ibn Ezra isn't right as long as the Mechoshech. So, you know. But still, you're right. But let's put that aside. Well, how would you approach this? The thing I was saying is true. It's like, I would look at the first six, right? You mean the first six. Right, is I mean, that at least sounds like he's giving you some sort of a unified system going on. So at least those, you could try to figure out what he's doing. And then once you have some sort of a system, now then the challenge is going to be to really get the other four into that system. But at least, like, you know, it seems like there's a lot of content, at least in the first ones. And they kind of have some sort of intuitive sense. So maybe we should try to see what we could get out of those six, ignoring the other ones, and then see if we can go further, you know? So what would you say there? You're saying is there's two in the water, two in the land, and two in the sky. So I guess the questions are, first of all, what's the idea of these three different regions? And then why do you have two of each? Right? Yeah, why not one of each or why not three of each? What's the idea? It's true. I mean, the Baal HaGadol breaks out the Tzachad Hashbachav, which is the first three, the second three, and the last four. And so Chazal seem to break it up. But Ibn Ezra doesn't seem to be going with that. Which is interesting. But okay, so what about the Torah 2? Right, the idea that there's two of each. So I think, and Mars is saying it's not a fluke, but I think more than that is that if you have one plague, so you, let's say the blood. You're not going to say God is in charge of the water. You'll just say he makes blood. When you have two things that you look for unification, so he says he sees the water and then the frogs. You say, oh, he's in control of the water, the blood and the frogs. He sees the land, two things. Oh, he's in control of the land. Two things in the sky. He's in control of the sky. One thing you don't generalize like that. It's just he's the blood god, or he's the frogs god, or he's the whatever. But the idea is like he's trying to lead them towards universals and to show when you have two of them in the water, then they must say, oh my gosh, he's really God, this God is in control of the Nile, he's in control of the river. And then they say, oh, two more, he says, oh, he's in control of the land, and he says, oh, he's in control of the skies. And I think what Mars said is good, is that the idolaters break up, they have many, many gods, right? Polytheism is that every different thing is another force, another power, another god that you have to propitiate, or, you know, and the major idea in the Makos is the Achdus Hashem, that basically all of nature is unified by one creator and one source. And the whole idolatrous way of thinking is like animating all different things, and the god of this, the god of that, the god of that, based upon your experience of the water. And you know, you animate all the different areas which you see. So it's showing us the three major areas of the world. Of Earth, I guess, which is the ground and the water and the sky, is all unified under God's control. Right? Okay, so then the question is, what about these other guys, right? Just as an approach here, I mean, Yonah's saying some good things, and I have some, similar thoughts, but I think they all need work. But the seventh one is the combination of the fire and of the storm, showing that the God is unified, and that even these distinct like components of nature could be under God's, I don't know, something like that. Something to do that it's not just he's in control of them individually, but he's the source of everything, and he could combine together these two apparently opposite things. Something in that arena. I'm not so sure about that. I think I need more thought on that one. The next one I think is good. The eighth one is this, the idea of unifying, saying God is in charge of everything. So that was the idolatry they had, local gods. The God of the Mitzrayim, the God of this land, the God of that land, the God of this land. So the Arba, which brings in the locusts from a wind from far away, shows that God has dominion not only over Mitzrayim land and land and water and sky, but it's over the entire world. He brings the wind from elsewhere. So it means it shows that God's domain is not just unified vis-a-vis the land of Mitzrayim, but there's one God over the entire world, entire earth, even down elsewhere. And then it's saying, the next one is, like we said also, that it shows even God's even stronger and in charge of the sun and the moon and the stars. Right? That's even for not just earth, but the universe. Now, you'll say, but Ibn Ezra holds that it was just a fog. So if it's a fog or something to that effect, it's not in control of the sun, the moon, and the stars. Right? But I think in the idolatrous mindset, that doesn't matter. Because the sun and the moon are not going to let anybody make a fog and block them out. Like the idea was, and I think they said the sun was the most worshipped god of them all, in all of it's different societies. I don't know it's an Australian necessarily, but the sun was presumably because they're like
their sun god is Ra.
So the idea is that they so it makes sense because they're like so to speak permanent. Right? That's the idea, the sun is permanent. Like what's more count more can you count on more than the sun rising? Right, and that's why it's like, but yet you could see it. So it's like a good replacement. It's you could see why people would turn to God, to them as gods. But basically, it showed is that the path, the attraction of the heavenly bodies as gods, or their permanence, eternality, and basically God is controlling them and depriving them from its triumph for days. So it shows that God's in control of them. But again, in not scientifically, it's not that scientifically God is messing with them. But idolatrously, is that if you look at them as gods, then you can't block them out. That's equally. It doesn't matter if you're messing with them or you're just blocking their light. Either way, they're gods. The gods wouldn't let such a thing. So it's basically showing, it's undermining their dominion, undermining them as gods, and showing that God is in control. They're basically just under God. Them and their powers are merely just tools of God, and God has a tool of light, using them to light up the world, but he could block them out, and they're just other things of nature. But the idea seemingly in this, all this stuff is that it's trying to show them that all their primitive ideas are, all their gods and all their different things which they worship, everything is really explained by one God who is in control of everything. And he's going through the working through their psychology and their belief system in terms of trying to unwind to break down that mentality and the way of thinking. I don't know about the Vangs Bahoros. It's kind of strange. I don't see exactly how it fits in. It's not clear even what he means. Like, I don't know the translation exactly what he means. It's a little bit tricky for me here. And he says the coming down of the destroyer from the spheres of honor to kill the firstborn. I don't even know what he means really. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to So that I think the hardest ones are the seventh one. It kind of the combination thing sounds good, but I think that could be a little better.
Spheres of honor,
Spheres of honor. Yeah.
It's interesting how he does put it in the same sense as the other ones, be Galga.
I know. But I don't know.
Kind of
still,
like some of the force he's trying to account for.
The force of life and death. Well, actually, it's. See, I want to. I think it might be a good idea. I ordered a book from the library on the Egyptian. This guy Budge, have you heard of him? Wallace Budge is the guy. I think I heard of him or someone. You know, this guy Sir Wallace Budge, I think his name is. He did lots of research. He's like an Egyptologist. He wrote a lot of books. I looked on the library online to. You could order books from the Queen's Library or whatever, and he had a lot of books on Egypt and their gods and their. He wrote something called the Book of the Dead or something. It's a famous book, the Egyptian Book of the Dead.
And this is an older guy.
Yeah, he's older. 1900, yeah, early 1900. Yeah. So I ordered a book called called the Egyptian Religion and Magic or something like that. Like there's he really did study the thing. He's like the top Egyptologist out there. He's not alive. He's not alive now. I'm sure. It's in the early 1900s.
Yeah, he wrote the Book of the Dead.
Yeah. So that seems to be his most famous book. But I think he said one thing is Wallace Budge, B-U-D-G.
Okay.
Yes, I think his famous. I think he said. I saw. I was looking online a little bit. Said something like they're very infatuated with death. I guess you see the mummification and all that. You know. So I don't know. Maybe the Mashbas, the destroyer coming down from the sphere of the heavens. Like maybe they had some sort of a thing about the god of death.
So
maybe that's God is in control, is the god of death itself. Maybe that's that was their highest thing, was the death god. So saying is God is the death god, or God's in control of death, but there's no death god, you know? Something like that, you know? Maybe that's their final god. So
their entire religion, now that you mention it, I remember, religion is based. I mean, the reason for the pyramids was the preservation of the Pharaoh's body.
Yeah,
right. And they would even kill, I think, some of the Pharaoh's servants at the same time.
Oh, really?
A lot of primitive things, like the ancient Chinese did something similar to the terracotta warriors. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, so it was based, definitely.
Yeah, so it'd be interesting to look into. I mean, hopefully I'm going to get this book, and maybe I'll see if, I don't know which book to get. There are a lot of books. I kind of just picked one that looked interesting. But, I feel like this Ibn Ezra is somehow, trying to show you how the Makos were getting into the minds of the Mitzrayim and trying to undercut their whole way of thinking about things and to teach them slowly to bring them towards the good ideas. So it's worth thinking. I mean, this is just I'm kind of doing a quick job on this thing we did very quickly. But I mean, I think to do it more thoroughly, you could really take each makkah, especially look at the Ibn Ezra's on the different makkahs. I mean, he's quoting the Kuzari, so he's not writing this in his words. It seems like it's a quote, even though I didn't find it in the Kuzari. So, but still, it's probably worth looking at Ibn Ezra's and thinking about these things, But there's a lot to do in the Makkahs, just this type of thing. I think the Makkahs have two objectives. One is to teach the Mitzrayim, and another thing is to teach the Jews, I guess. I mean, they're both in the second. They both mention both of those. So there really could really be a study, and presumably at the Seder or something, it's a good type of thing to do. I mean, to think into the, as part of Seaports, to tell the events and this is a part of it. You could actually get into it on a deeper level than just telling the story about the Makkos. I mean, it kind of gets plain every year, but there's insight. You could look at, you could go into it on a deeper level. This is a good intro, I think, to Ibn Ezra. Alrighty. So have a good one.